When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
This is
Fight Disciples.
Welcome, 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 welcome. Look at this, eh? Live on a Monday night. It is, of course, fight week for Anthony Joshua, Francis Ngannou. So it's a little bit of a special thing. You're going to have to put up with us live at 8 o'clock every single night this week, including a watch-along on Friday. So however you're consuming this fight on Friday night, why not have the Fight Disciples YouTube channel on? Mm-hmm. Bit of a fight companion. That's right. You can have our instant reactions to whatever plays out on Friday evening. And as I said, every single night this week we'll be live on the YouTube channel. So make sure you subscribe to it. So therefore, when we do go live, you'll get a notification so you won't miss out on any of the stuff we're doing. And the way that we're going to break this up this week is that we're going to do one night on one fighter. We're going to do another night on another fighter. And then on Wednesday, we're going to invite you to come and join me and him. That's right, because I'm sure you'll be sick to death of listening to mine and his voices. So if you want to get involved in the show and you're consuming this via our YouTube channel or via X, Twitter, X, you get the gist, send us a message. Just get in contact, send us a message saying, listen, man, yeah, I'll be up for it to talk about the AJ, talk about Ngannou as a contest this weekend, and any fight actually on the undercard as well. You might be into Zhang and Parker, you might be into the Nick Ball fight, whatever it may be. You can get involved with that on Wednesday. So on Wednesday at 8 o'clock, your show. Me and him will be here, but it'll be you. If you want to ask questions, if you want to facilitate a talking point, whatever it may be, you want to throw it out to the masses so therefore people can come back to you and talk and interact with you, you're more than welcome to do so. And then on Thursday we'll round everything up, because we'll listen everything then, won't we? We'll listen a weigh-in, we'll listen a press conference, we'll have seen all the pomp and ceremony in the interviews throughout the whole course of the week. So on Thursday, we will do a live Knicks picks. Are you going to be cool with that, doing a live Knicks picks? Are you not talking, Nicholas? How funny is this? You put Nicholas on the.
What have I done here?
This is hilarious. This is, stay live, Wiz. Stay live, because this is live right now. He has no idea what he's doing. Do you want to log yourself out, sweetheart? Look at that. You do a lot. This is what I've got to put up with on a day by day, week by week basis, right? Every single time we do a live program, I have to check his microphone for him. We've been doing it for 8 years. I have to check his microphone. I have to check his headphones to check that all his connections are working, and then we stick him on live. And as you've just seen, he's not prepared. Here we go. Is he coming back? When you're ready, Nicholas. Anytime today, sunshine. Nope. Whilst he's trying to sort that out, I'll tell you how this show's going to work, right? Because today we're going to try and dedicate it to a little bit of AJ, all right? We're going to just concentrate on him. Tomorrow night, we're going to do Francis Ngannou. And then, like I said, on Wednesday, we're going to get stuck into you and you having a conversation with us about all sorts of bits and bats. Are you back now?
That was a bit exciting, wasn't it? That was an exciting way to start the show.
Unbelievable.
Because I thought, I wonder if we're on YouTube. Pressed my phone. My headphones went to YouTube on my phone. Well,
right.
Thought, oh, shit. Turned it off.
How many times do I have to tell you, right? Switch your phone off, because this happens every single time. Why are you interested in watching yourself on YouTube? Do the show, right? Other people will watch you on YouTube. Other people will watch you on X. Just do the program, mate. Yeah? Look at that. Amazing. Look at
nice
that.
Comment there from Brian. We'll throw that one up. Yes, Brian. Brian.
Listen, without the warm lager, mate, you wouldn't even get a blooming program, pal. You'd be getting red hot Ribena is what you'd be getting,
exactly.
Lad.
Exactly.
Anyway, as I was saying, tonight we're going to concentrate on Anthony Joshua. Tomorrow night it's going to be all about Francis Ngannou. Wednesday, it's you. Whatever you want to talk about, as long as it's connected to this event, you can do that on Wednesday. And then on Thursday, we'll have a bit of a wrap-up and get stuck into that. Now, as I said a moment or two ago, are you excited about this week, mate? A little bit of something different? If you can sort your technology out, are you capable of running this now for 5 days?
Yeah, I can't wait. I've been super looking forward to this week in a weird way. Funnily enough, I was at the kids MMA club a little bit earlier on, bumped into an absolute boxing legend, John Hyland, a Liverpool boxer, turned promoter, went to the Olympic Games back in the day. And we were chatting and stuff, and he said, you know, you're into this bit of circus on Friday night. And I was like, you know what, John? I have to confess, I kind of am, because this is what boxing looks like in 2024. And if this gets us to the holy land of the best versus the best on a consistent basis, if this is the route Mr. Turkey wants to take to get us there, then mate, come on. I'm on the yellow brick road. I'm dancing along the way with the Scarecrow and the Tin Man. And who was the other one? Oh, the Lion. The Cowardly Lion. Yeah. Let's go. All the way to Oz. Uncle Turkey's leading us. I'm all in, man. I'm all in. Do you know what? He had me at the promo. You know this. He had me at the promo. That little 8-bit video game boxing. That was it then. That was it. That'll do for me, kid. Knockout chaos. Let's hope we get a knockout, or it will be chaos.
Couple of things, right? Getting a few messages from people wanting us to maybe do a review of the boxing that's happened just of the weekend just gone. Yes, we're going to speak Ray Ford. We'll do it in a bit. We're going to speak about Sam Eggington, and we'll even touch upon the pressers that we had for Garcia and Haney as well at the back end of last week. So we'll get stuck into that. Usual boxing show, but mainly focusing, of course, on AJ and AJ and Ngannou. And Rob's just said, listen, watch this. This is brilliant. Rob's a regular on the boxing scene. How the hell is Nick going to organise the pay-per-view, the stream and all that type of thing come Friday for the live watch-along? I've no idea, mate. I've no idea. So that's why you should tune in. It could be absolute carnage. He could end up just commentating on a fight that he can't even see. Yeah? That's what you want.
One thing I will say, Rob, in my own defence here, I will be drunk, though. So at least it'll be a drunken watch-along. So,
there you go.
You know, worst case scenario, if I can't get the fight on, I'll go full OnlyFans for you.
Jesus. Right. There's a reason to be tuning in at 8 o'clock every single day this week. Right, let's get on with it, because you've tuned in. You want to have some boxing chats. So we're going to have some boxing chat. If you want to interact with it, if we're talking absolute wham throughout the course of this, comment section's open. I'll try my best to keep an eye on all the comment section, and we'll keep them flicking up on screen. You might even trigger off a thought and an avenue of where we could go with this. All right? Right, we'll start with this. You ready? Is Anthony Joshua the best heavyweight of this era? Just hold your horses on the comment section first and foremost, all right? Let him sound off. I'll sound off and then get stuck into it, all right? So is Anthony Joshua the best heavyweight of this era?
I think right now there is even though he's got two defeats to Usyk, there is still an argument, absolutely, that Anthony Joshua is the best heavyweight of this era. Reason being, you know, I've never seen from a conversation that for a long time involved three people, and then for a short space of time involved four people. The fall from grace out of this conversation from Deontay Wilder has been absolutely stratospheric. Losing to Joe Parker, which no shame the form Joe Parker was in that night, has completely and utterly eradicated Deontay Wilder, whether you like it or not, from this conversation. I feel like this is only a three-way conversation. Now, when you talk about era, we're talking about the last decade, because the decade before that belonged to Vladimir Klitschko. The decade before that belonged to Lennox Lewis. So we're talking about the last 10 years, roughly 2015 up to 2024, something like that, in that ballpark. That's what we're talking about, this era. And in this era, when you look at heavyweights, and now again, there's a big conversation about Usyk because most of his career was at cruiserweight. But at heavyweight, it's not even comparable when you look at achievements and you look at world title fights, because to be the best of an era, you've got to fight the best of your era, win, lose, or draw, and the statistics speak for themselves. When you look at those statistics, Anthony Joshua, in his 30 professional fights, has had 12 world title fights against 10 different opponents. Now, obviously, the big comparison is Tyson Fury, and we'll come back to signature wins because that's the real switchover. We'll come back to that in a second. But just on those statistics alone, we're talking about a guy in this era, a two-time world champion that has had 12 world title fights against 10 different opponents. And his big comparison, certainly from a British perspective, is Tyson Fury. Tyson Fury, in a greater period of time, has had 35 professional fights, which is 5 more than AJ. But actually, when you look at his world title fights, he's had 6. He's had 6 world title fights in 35 fights, Tyson Fury, against 4 different dudes. Because 3 of them were against one guy. Does that make 7? Sorry. Must make 7 then, yeah. So that's, you took on to dude that's had 6 world title fights against a guy that's had 12 world title fights. And one of those guys, the guy who's had 6, half of them were against one guy. 3 of them were against one individual. So that's why there's certainly a case that when you look at the career of Anthony Joshua, it's easier to say he fought the best of his era. Because Tyson consistently hasn't fought the best of his era. Now, the bigger conversation, of course, comes in when you look at the achievements of Mr. Alexander Usyk. Okay, most of his career was at cruiserweight, but he's had 21 professional fights. 10 of them, almost half, have been world title fights. And all 10 have been on the road. Not one of them has been in his hometown. I know the Polish thing against Dubois was as close as he could get, but still. That's 48% of his career has been world title fights. That's phenomenal. For percentage stake, AJ, 40% of his career has been world title fights. Tyson Fury, 17% of his career has been world title fights. Is that not a reason in which we should say, yeah, as the heavyweight in the heavyweight division, Anthony Joshua remains the best of this era?
You've turned into me. What's going on? Stats, numbers, facts, figures. You've been scouring today, haven't you, lad? You've been all over the gaff today. You've been going, I need some numbers here. And this is the argument. I personally don't believe that the word best and the word greatest, I put in two different categories, right? So if you're going to class something as the best of something, I think you can have an opinion on that. And that can be just purely down to you. Down to your eye test, down to what you class as the best of, right? So if you're watching this and you're thinking to yourself, right, for me, this person is the best heavyweight of this era, I don't personally believe that you've got to be able to back that up with facts and stats. But if we're going to talk about the greatest of an era, then you do have to bring that in. You have to bring the facts and the stats, all the things that you've just been speaking about. And you're right in what you're saying. I personally don't think right now that the greatest heavyweight of this era has been defined. And it's because there's so many arguments for and against each other. So, for example, what you just said there about Anthony Joshua all stacks up, right? 12 world title fights in comparison to less than half of that for Tyson Fury in the heavyweight division. 7 world title defenses, less than half that for Tyson Fury. Tyson Fury has defended against 2 guys that he's previously beaten up. 1 Wilder, 1 Derek Chisora. And like you said, the world title fights that he's been involved in, or 3 of them were against one fella. Now, so that, from a stat point of view, absolutely is in favour of Anthony Joshua. But how did Anthony Joshua become world champion? Who did he have to beat to become world champion? So he becomes world champion beating Charles Martin. Now, Charles Martin gets that title because he fights for a vacant title. He wins it kind of on a technicality because the other kid that he was fighting bust his knee. Yeah. That title was vacant because it was stripped off Tyson Fury within days of beating Vladimir Klitschko.
Correct.
So Anthony Joshua gets his opportunity against Charles Martin. With all due respect, Charles Martin is not the greatest heavyweight of all time. It was one of those where Eddie Hearn and Matchroom gambled on it, said, this is the chance to become champ, let's go. And AJ absolutely delivers and becomes champion. So the moniker of two-time unified heavyweight world champion comes from that. Okay, he goes and then starts to collect belts, a vacant WBA belt in the fight that's connected to the Klitschko fight. And then he's the only guy, this is in his favour, this one, where he has unified genuinely the division because he fought Joseph Parker for the WBO crown. That's how he's got those three together, all right?
Yeah.
Loses them to Andy Ruiz. So the second time he becomes champion is by beating Andy Ruiz. So his two victories to become champion are Charles Martin and Andy Ruiz. But the two victories for Tyson Fury, I don't think anybody can argue that they're the signature wins, mate. On the road in Germany against Vladimir Klitschko, that's a sensational victory to become heavyweight champion of the world. And then you go off, do whatever you're doing, you come back. The second fight against Deontay Wilder to become the WBC heavyweight champion, that again is a standout. So if we're talking signature wins in the heavyweight division,
correct,
Tyson Fury's gone all day long with those two big fights that crowned him the champion of the world.
Yeah, and listen, you know, there's a post there from Andrew Jeffrey, completely agrees with you. None of Joshua's wins come close to beating Klitschko in Germany and Wilder in the US. Let's stop being silly, lads. I'm not being silly, Andrew. We agree with you. You know, that's the whole point. That's why I wanted to flag that post up. I was talking about statistics. Statistics can lie, because I agree. The two best signature wins of any heavyweighter this year, this era, was firstly going to Germany and ending the 10-year reign of Vladimir Klitschko, ending the Klitschko era of dominance over the heavyweight division. And then, of course, going in with the guy who was then. You know, there's a lot of people now saying, well, Wilder was never that good. You know, Joseph Parker just exploited it. Well, prior to, you know, Tyson Fury, almost basically after a three-year layoff, walking into that Staples Center in Los Angeles and taking him on and getting up off the floor with his Lazarus moments, then going away and getting in shape and, you know, and sort himself out, and then going back in with Wilder and having the two performances that he did, both of which we were blessed enough to be at. You know, they were some of the best performances by any heavyweight I've ever seen live. One of the greatest trilogies in the history of the heavyweight division. That's the kind of stuff that AJ can't lay claim to. They're two absolutely monumental, biggest wins of this era. I would argue the third biggest scalp of this era is one another. If Fury was to beat AJ, of course, that's it then. Oh. You've mopped up this era. I completely agree with that.
Well, just hold for a second on that. Because I personally think the person that is closest to be able to class themselves as the best heavyweight of this era is Alexander Usyk.
Because he beat the man. That would argue about.
And my argument for this, there's loads could play out now over the next 6 months where this could be defined. I don't think it's defined right now, but it could be over the next 6 months. Let's say on Friday that Anthony Joshua beats Francis Ngannou. We all know what Turki Alshayk has said. That means that Anthony Joshua's next fight will be for the undisputed heavyweight championship of the world or the winner of Fury and Usyk. We don't know how the belts are going to situate, but we know that the winner of this Friday is going to fight the winner of May the 18th. All right? So as it stands right now, Alexander Usyk, who is the guy from Cruiserweight, has stepped up into heavyweight and he has beaten the two-time unified heavyweight champion. He's beaten him twice.
Yeah.
And on May the 18th, he gets the opportunity to beat the other guy in this conversation. So if he beats that guy, even though he's had less heavyweight championship fights than Anthony Joshua and less heavyweight title defenses than Anthony Joshua, if Usyk beats Fury, I think the argument's done.
Yeah.
He is the guy of this era in the heavyweight division.
Even though he's only had five fights in the heavyweight division to this point, that would be his sixth professional fight. Just speaking of Usyk, again, I wanted to start with AJ because the statistics still point towards AJ in a lot of ways. And the big conversation seems to be AJ and Fury. Mm-hmm. When you look at Fury's notable opponents, people like you go, okay, fair enough, that's a good win. Hmm. it's hard to put Chisora in there because he's beaten him three times, but Chisora's been a fringe contender forever. If you want to put Chisora in there, go for it. Other than Chisora, you're looking at Klitschko, Wilder, Dillian White. You know, you're struggling to find
You've got two Wilders, though, haven't you? You've got to put them all in there. So you've got
exactly.
two Wilders.
And you've got retiring Klitschko. The version of Klitschko AJ beat wasn't the same Klitschko in Germany that Tyson beat. So again, putting the credits on there. But when you look at notable wins for AJ, and sorry, we are going to come back to Usyk because I wanted to go full circle and finish with Usyk because I think you're right. But when you look at AJ's notable wins, Dillian White, he won the title from Charles Martin, but Charles Martin was a world champion. Whichever way you want to dress it up, he was a world champion. Vladimir Klitschko, okay, a second coming or a third coming of Klitschko, come off out of retirement, but still Klitschko in probably AJ's best, still most entertaining best fight. Carlos Takam, fringe contender. If you're giving Chisora to Fury, you've got to give Takam to AJ. Joe Parker, a former world champion. Yep. Alexander Povetkin, who's been in with Klitschko and Fury and pretty much everybody. And you've got Andy Ruiz, who was established because he beat AJ, but he got revenge.
Yeah.
And probably even Khabib Pulev. So you're looking at eight names of notes on AJ's resume compared to only four names of notes on Tyson Fury's resume.
But how many of those eight names stack up? How many of them really stack up? Let's be honest. Come on.
Well, the two of them were world champions that he beat.
Yeah.
You've
got Josie Parker was a world champion.
Yes. You've got Martin was a world champion. You had Andy Ruiz as a world champion.
Yeah.
Whichever way you look at it, they're still world champions, you know?
And Vlad wasn't a champion going into that fight, but he'd been a champion for a long period of time.
Well, let's be honest, out of everyone AJ's beaten, Klitschko's still the biggest name by some margin.
Yeah.
Even though he'd been retired for a few years. Just to come back to, before we go to Usyk then, think about this though. Anthony Joshua wins Olympic gold, turns professional, wins a vacant Commonwealth title, wins a vacant British title, beats Charles Martin to become IBF champion, then adds a vacant second world title when he fights Klitschko, loses to Ruiz, but avenges Ruiz. And then he has those two defeats, of course, to Usyk. Towards the end, since then, obviously, he's put a couple of wins together. By comparison, Tyson Fury, very similar. What it was his 15th professional fight. It was 14 and 15 for AJ for Commonwealth British. Tyson did it in one fight. He beat a then champion, British and Commonwealth, Derek Chisora. When he won the European title, he beat the champion. When he became the unified world champion, he beat the champion in Vladimir Klitschko as well. And when he became WBC champion, he beat the champion in Deontay Wilder. By comparison, even though Tyson Fury's had a lot less fights against the top caliber opponents, what I will say is the guys Tyson Fury has beaten were all established champions. They weren't titles, with all due respect, bought and paid for, vacant belts. You know, vacant belts are the weaker challenge, more often than not, than beating an established world champion. It's a belt that's been given up, it's been freed up or whatever. So that's the other way to look at it. Even though AJ's got statistically the bigger numbers, probably the more notable names over a greater period of his career, he's had a lot more world title fights. There's an awful lot of vacant belt victories in there and B-level opponents. As I say, AJ's best career win remains Vladimir Klitschko at Wembley 2 years after Tyson ended his era in Germany. Usyk. Statistically, Usyk is on a completely different level, let's be honest. Yep. He wins the gold medal like AJ, wins the gold medal in London 2012, albeit down a heavyweight. Notably, on way to that gold medal, he's the last man ever to beat Artur Beterbiev. That was just part of the mix. Makes his pro debut 2013, same year as AJ. In a 10th professional fight, becomes world champion. Took 14 and 15 fights for Fury and AJ. He did it in 10, became cruiserweight champion, became unified champion, going around each country, picking up each belt individually, not doing what Fury did and winning them all at once, not doing what AJ did and pull them together later on. He went and unified inside 15 professional fights. Then he had that big sign off the cruiserweight division by knocking out Bellew in his 16th fight. Then he has 5 fights at heavyweight. He has 2 warm-up fights. Then he beats AJ twice to become a world champion. And then he has the defense against Dubois as well. 10 world title fights. When he fights Fury in a couple of weeks' time for his 11th world title fight, that means Usyk 22 fights, 11 world title fights, a 50% world title resume. And once more, not a single one of those fights took place in Ukraine. It's notable wins. Glowacki, a world champion. Hooker, world champion. Marius Briedis, a world champion. Murat Gassiev, a world champion. Tony Bellew, a former world champion. As a heavyweight, he beat up Chisora just like Fury has done many times. And more than anything else, 2 wins over AJ. That weren't disputed. He beat him twice. Is that the end of the conversation? Is Usyk the main man? A heavyweight in this era?
I think on May the 18th, if Usyk beats Tyson Fury, the conversation is over. I think if Tyson Fury beats Alexander Usyk on May the 18th, he still has to beat AJ. That's my own personal opinion.
Yeah.
I think Usyk is in the driving seat of being the guy in this division. And then I also think that, let's say Usyk beats Tyson Fury, Anthony Joshua has to avenge the loss against Alexander Usyk, and he also has to beat Tyson Fury. So AJ's 2 fights away, Usyk's 1 fight away, and I think Tyson Fury's 2 fights away as well from being the guy of this era.
Yeah, because don't forget, Lennox Lewis, and we'll come back to Lennox Lewis a little bit later on the show, because I think that's an important conversation, something that AJ has compared himself to many times. But Lennox Lewis cleaned up, unified the heavyweight division in the 3-belt era. Didn't get to Tyson because Holyfield and the ear bite, and Holyfield got in the way, so he had to do the Holyfield thing. But even though he cleaned up, everyone was still going, yeah, but you've not beat Mike Tyson, have you, Lennox? You've not beat Mike Tyson. So even though Tyson, by the time Lennox Lewis got his hands on him, was by and far down the end of the mountain, he still needed that to define himself as the greatest heavyweight of that period of time, that decade, that era. He still needed that version of Tyson. So I think even if Usyk beats, let's say this plays out, Alexander Usyk beats Tyson Fury in a few weeks' time, AJ, if successful, goes and fights Usyk, beats Usyk, gets revenge, wins the 3rd fight. All praise Ben Davidson, everything else. Wins that 3rd fight. AJ then can't go, well, I'm the best of this year, and I beat Usyk and he beat Fury. People are still going to go, nah, man, I want to see you beat Fury. Just like they did with Lennox Lewis and Mike Tyson.
Yeah, I completely agree. Get your comments in on that little bit of conversation. That's probably going to rage throughout the whole course of the week. This is interesting from Luke, making the comparison of Usyk to Canelo and the run that they had. So Usyk's run at cruiserweight, Canelo's run at super middleweight to become the champion, beating the champions that had the belts, lining them all up, going through them all, and even had a mandatory in the middle of all that, didn't he? A lot of people obviously classing Canelo as the greatest in that division. Okay, super middleweight, I think he's the only undisputed champion that has ever existed at super middleweight, because the division is younger, of course, than the traditional weights. I suppose the only other conversation that you can have in that division, in cruiserweight, that is, for Alexander Usyk, is where does he compare to Evander Holyfield? And for me, the run, I know that there's a lot of recency bias here, but Usyk's run, the way that he did it, is better than what Evander Holyfield did when he did it in the 1990s. Anyway, that's for another week. That's a whole new show. Mark that down, Nicholas. We'll do that one, comparing Usyk to Holyfield.
Usyk.
Yes, absolutely. We'll do that.
Fury Usyk fight week, we'll do that chat. Absolutely, yeah.
There you go. You just mentioned Ben Davison's name there, and I suppose that's the little extra that has been put towards Team AJ in recent times. And a lot of people are obviously going, that's it. That's the one. That's the thing. What has he added? What has Ben Davison added, if you can take it from some of the other fighters that he's worked with, what has he added to AJ's game that has made people this week start believing in AJ again? Because if we look back 6 months, a lot of people have lost that faith.
Yeah, I think it was more the performance against Otto Wallen, for me, was so much so much further ahead than the performance against Jermaine Franklin, and so much further ahead than the performance against Robert Hellenius. You know, Hellenius was a little bit disappointing, of course, replacing Dillian White with just a few weeks' notice and all that. So he never really, with all due respect to Robert Hellenius, he didn't look like he was in there to try and win. Whereas Otto Wallen was coming off the biggest win of his career over Murat Gassiev out in Turkey. He was a real live opponent and he had a full training camp for it. We spoke about it many times. We're like, this is dangerous, man. And I stand by the fact that if AJ with Derek James in his corner, who fought Jermaine Franklin, rocks up and fights Otto Wallen, he has a terrible night. A terrible night. The problem for Otto Wallen was he had the terrible night because this version of AJ was switched on. He looked happy. He looked composed. He was sharp. His footwork was really good. He was getting in and out of range really well. He was trusting his hands. And that's got to come back to the coach. That's got to come back to the work that they're doing in the gym, whether it's the sparring, whether it's... And this was something that Ben was rightly credited for with Tyson Fury. When Ben had Tyson Fury, let's be honest, his role wasn't necessarily to be a technical boxing coach. His role was to be a nutritionist slash strength and conditioning coach, because it was all about getting the weight off. But simultaneously with getting the weight off Tyson to become competitive again was the mind work, getting inside his head, getting him to believe that, hey, man, you're the fucking Gypsy King, bro. You went to Germany and ended an era of dominance by the Klitschko brothers. That's who you are. Let me just remind you of how good you are again. I don't think in that period of time he worked with Tyson Fury made any kinds of leaps and bounds in terms of his skill set. But psychologically, he rebuilt Tyson Fury. And I think he should be credited with doing almost the exact same thing. One thing was good out of this week, I've heard already, was AJ's come out and said, I've spoke to Derek James and I've said, listen, I'm going to stay with Ben regardless of what happens now on out. I'm with Ben. That for me means, yeah, you're happy, man. He's always been a London boy, AJ. He's always been happiest around. That's why he rolls deep. He's happiest around friends and family, his management team. They're all his boys. They all eat off the same plate. He likes that environment. I never liked the fact that he was, you know, pissing off to America. And at the time, I was like, yeah, that's how you're going to get the hunger, man. This is like Rocky III. Take yourself into that environment where everyone's trying to kill you. But that just didn't feel right. But when he walked out against Wallen with that performance, I'm like, okay, this is an AJ I can get behind. This is an AJ that I can now think, oh, could he actually become a three-time world champion? And if he performs like he did against Otto Wallen, against Francis Ngannou, I think he's got a magnificent chance to put on a big, big performance.
Yeah. Listen, Ben's done amazingly well with other fighters. Lee Wood is probably the highlight, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly.
Of being able to turn where Lee Wood was to where Lee Wood is. And that is here. It's, don't get me wrong, there's technical aspects to this. There's a lot of work.
Sorry, just putting up a little post there from Luke who agrees with you. Absolutely, yeah.
There's a lot of work there from the technical aspects of stuff, looking at tape and tendencies and nuances of how your opponent approaches fights, and obviously getting used to those patterns whilst you're training for that individual. But a lot of it comes down to what's going on between your own ears and believing in your own ability. I've covered a lot of AJ's fights. I've been ringside for a lot of AJ's fights. I've seen a lot of good stuff. I've seen some negative stuff. I've seen some bad stuff. But if we look at Hellenius, now I know the Hellenius fight ain't the greatest fight. He delivers the knockout. But if you actually look at that, the early parts of that Hellenius fight, when it's not that attractive to watch, his feet are really good. They're actually really good. He just doesn't let his hands go. He gets himself into situations, and I know this is pre-Ben, by the way. He gets himself into situations, and then for some reason he stops. He doesn't let those hands go. And then gets himself out of range, and he's throwing ones and twos. Teaming up with Ben, from my understanding, and I spent some time with Ben Davison recently, I had a good sit down, good chat. I love picking his brains. He's fantastic to listen to on boxing. And it's not necessarily him saying we've reinvigorated, we've changed everything about it. That's not what at all. It's a quite a collaborative process. Speaking to the fighter, he said, listen, man, what's your thoughts on this? Tell me why you're doing X, Y, and Z. Have you thought about doing X, Y, and Z? What about this as a solution to that situation that you're finding yourself in? Why are you finding yourself in this place here? Why don't we go down this avenue instead? And it's all that. And obviously AJ likes that. He obviously likes being part of that collaborative process rather than being told, do this, do that, do this, do that. If he doesn't agree with it, he's still going to do it because of the trust that he has for the trainer, but it might not necessarily be playing out as he wants it to play out, as we've seen in recent fights. So that's what I think we saw in the Wallin fight, a collaborative experience between trainer and fighter who are on the same page, showing the same ethos and thought processes towards fights. A trainer that has an understanding of what the fighter needs, and the fighter now believing that he can deliver what he's been asked of him. Now, obviously, you've gone out there, and I'm not taking anything away from that opponent, that opponent in Otto Wallin. You see, very easy with hindsight to say, it's only Otto Wallin. Nah, man. Going into that, Otto Wallin is a very, very capable fighter.
Yeah.
He's just come off the back of a great win. We saw what he did with Tyson Fury. We were there for that fight in Las Vegas. We saw what he did on that night. That was a proper fight, a proper opponent, a real jeopardy moment for Anthony Joshua. And he dealt with it brilliantly. And he dealt with it because something in here said, made him believe. He made him believe in his own abilities. He got in range, he let his hands go. And now it's going to be really interesting to see what Anthony Joshua turns up on Friday. Because now there's real hard evidence between those two people, Ben Davison and Anthony Joshua, where they can go back to a dressing room after a fight and go, see, I told you. Now we've got evidence. Now there's a belief pattern. We had a plan. We went out. We delivered the plan. You did it. I didn't do it. You did it. That breeds confidence, doesn't it? That breeds even more confidence. So I'm really interested to see what version of him we get on Friday. I think it's going to have to be a slightly different approach because obviously Ngannou showed things in those 10 rounds with Tyson Fury that I don't think any of us thought that he would be doing in a boxing ring. So you've got to maybe bring some different parts of your arsenal to the game on Friday night. But Anthony Joshua, under the tutelage of Ben Davison, is more than capable of putting on a show on Friday night and having a shutout. Having a performance where we all go, geez, man, absolute mustard.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I agree with Tan here, who's posted saying Ben's done something Robert Garcia, Derek James, etc. have not been able to do, and that's get AJ to trust them. And that's absolutely bob on. You know, you just picked up the same thing. I think the Robert McCracken journey went so well for so long, but it was always going to end pear-shaped for me. And that's because Rob always had his feet into two areas. He was working with AJ, but he was also committed to Team GB. And when you've got a fighter the size of AJ, the magnitude of AJ, that's not a part-time gig. No matter how good your support coaches are, no matter if you bring in Angel Fernandez or whatever it might be, that's not a part-time gig. And I think that it came to a head, of course, with the Usyk fight when Robert Garcia was committed to Team GB out in Tokyo and wasn't with AJ for the entire full camp. You knew then, well, that's the end of Robert Garcia. He's got to make a decision now and move forward. He tried Rob McCracken. He got rid of Rob McCracken. Tried Rob Garcia for the Usyk second fight. Tried Angel Fernandez. He was kind of around that fight as well. Then he went to Derek James for the up until the Hellenius fight. And then it seemed like a timing thing with Ben Davidson. But listen, when you hear people like Devin Haney, the undisputed champion of the world and now super lightweight, when he's coming out and saying the things he says about Ben Davidson, you know that he's a quality coach. You know Ben's committed. You know Ben a lot better than I do. And whenever you spend time, you come away going, man, that kid's got a kid, I don't mean that insulting, that guy's got an incredible boxing brain. He lives, eats, sleeps, breathes, shits, and snots his nose with boxing. He's obsessed with it. That's how a coach should be. You know, Sugar Hill's probably exactly the same way. Joe Guy, there's many coaches who absolutely live it. It's about finding the right coach for you, who works for you, who's committed to you, who's got everything you need. And right now, in this place and time, just like when Tyson had to come back and reinvent himself and get rid of all the weight after the 3-year layoff, Ben Davidson was the perfect coach for the perfect time. Right now, Ben Davidson is the perfect coach at the perfect time for Anthony Joshua. But the problem with that relationship is it isn't going to run the full course of Joshua's career, because I can't see Ben ever cornering AJ against Tyson out of loyalty's sake. I might be wrong, but I just can't see that happening, which means that at some point AJ is going to have to change coaches once more.
business at the end of the day, innit? Let's see how that plays out. Obviously, we're getting ahead of ourselves, guessing on how that might play. But I'm excited about what we might see on Friday night. I really am. There's an opportunity here to make a bit of a statement, given the fact that Francis Ngannou has come into the boxing sphere off the back of the Tyson Fury fight. Yes, he's 0-1-1. There is a narrative in and around that. There's an opportunity for AJ to do something that Tyson Fury couldn't do, and obviously then get the fans even more excited for a fight that we genuinely thought had gone. I genuinely thought that AJ Fury had gone. Mm-hmm. If Fury can come through against Alexander Usyk, it's absolutely back on. And do you know something? This version of Anthony Joshua against against Alexander Usyk, part three, even though I thought he had his pants pulled down in two occasions, I'm not against it, because this is a very different version of Anthony Joshua.
Yeah, I think the coaches at that time got it way wrong. You know, there was a lot of, you know, and funnily enough, it wasn't too long ago, I listened to Angel Fernandez on TalkSport, and he was saying, yeah, we got the tactics wrong for the Usyk fight, and, you know, blah, blah. And you think, fucking hell, mate, were you one of the guys that kind of went, yeah, let's try and outbox Alexander Usyk? Because, you know, I ain't no boxing coach, but I'm pretty sure 99.9% of people in the comments right now and watching this live would have said to AJ, whatever you do, don't try and outbox Usyk. Just run out there and chin him, man. And I think next time around, that may well be the tactics. You know, he's got to be aggressive. He's got to be what we see in flashes of against Otto Wallen. And that brings us back full circle now then to the Ngannou fight and what the Ngannou fight does for him and what potentially is AJ's future. You know, AJ talks a lot, Adam, about becoming a three-time heavyweight champion, you know, doing the same thing that Lennox Lewis did. Lennox Lewis, not only the greatest British heavyweight, greatest British boxer of all time, in my opinion. Can he step? Is there enough in this era for AJ to be able to stand shoulder to shoulder with Lennox Lewis, in your opinion?
No. And that's harsh. And that's nothing to do with AJ. It's nothing to do with...
Even if he beats Ngannou, even if he beats Tyson Fury, let's say, and then after Fury, if he beats Usyk in a third fight, that wouldn't put him shoulder to shoulder with Lennox?
Well, let's look at the stats. You know that I love my facts and my figures, mate. So, obviously, if he ends up the top of the tree here, that would make him three-time heavyweight world champion, yeah? Of which Lennox Lewis did the exact same thing.
Yeah.
It would also, I assume, if the sanctioning bodies play the game, that would also make him the undisputed champion as well, which is something that Lennox Lewis did, as we all know. Lennox had 18 world title fights, 13 world title defenses. And if you're looking at those signature victories, I'm going to put Vitaly in there. I know people have their own opinion on that Vitaly fight the last time out, but I'm going to put Vitaly in there. Obviously, you got Mike Tyson in there. Yes, it's a version of Mike Tyson that maybe wasn't the 1980s version of Mike Tyson, but I don't care. It's Mike Tyson. Evander Holyfield, of course. And then I look around the rest of the resume, and I know there's two with Holyfield in there, and I thought that he won the first one, which was a draw, far more convincingly than he did when he actually became the undisputed champion in the second fight. So you could probably put two Holyfields in this mix. I look around the rest of them and I look, Bruno's probably in there, maybe, when you look at the rest of the level of the opponent. Is Reza Ruddock one of them? I don't know. As his signature wins now for Lennox Lewis. Listen, I'm not dogging on it, because I just think that Lennox's era is a better era than what you were saying before about AJ's signature wins, Fury's current signature wins. I think that era is a better era.
Okay. And that's why
I think it's difficult for anybody in this era to be ranked alongside Lennox Lewis, because Lennox had a better caliber of fighter to fight against in order to become great, whereas these guys I don't think do.
So Lennox had 19 world title fights, and of course he had a couple of losses in there, just like AJ. And you could argue AJ's, the two people that beat AJ, arguably better than the two people that beat Lennox Lewis. Oliver McCall and Hazim Rahman beat Lennox Lewis, and you've got Alexander Usyk and maybe, you know, Andy Ruiz is, you know, is a little bit of a McCall type character, I guess. But, you know, you could argue that losing to Usyk stands up better than those. But when you look at, you know, 19 world title fights, the losses, the two losses and the one draw that's included in there, all avenged, something that AJ hasn't done yet. And that's 19 world title fights against 16 different opponents. So statistically, and we had the stats before, 43% of Lennox Lewis's career were world title fights. So AJ's on 40% at the moment. He had 43. Just some of the notable names I put down. Razor Ruddock, of course, he beat Ruddock and then was upgraded to world champion status after Riddick Bowe refused to fight him. So it wasn't a world title fight, but certainly a name. Tony Tucker, Frank Bruno, Oliver McCall, Ray Mercer, Henry Akinwande was a world champion, Andrew Golota, Shannon Briggs, Evander Holyfield, Michael Grant, another world champion, Franz Botha, David Tua, who was supposed to be the next superstar, and then Rachman, of course, revenge, similar to AJ, ending with Tyson, and then Vitali Klitschko. You're right. He's, you know, the era when Lennox was the man, absolutely, it was a better era of the heavyweight division. And there's nothing Fury, Joshua, or Usyk can do about that. There's nothing you can do about it. But when you look at world title fight percentages, when you look at avenging losses, when you look at how you what you've done for the sport, you've got to factor that when we talk about the greatest of all time with Muhammad Ali, we always factor in what happened outside the ring as well, how he changed society, how he changed, how he brought boxing from the back pages to the front pages, how he became a mainstream global icon. What Anthony Joshua did to British boxing cannot be overlooked because I spent the best part of the first 10 years of my career in fucking leisure centres watching world title fights and not even proper world title fights because we didn't get WBC and IBF and WBA belts back then. It was WBU if you were lucky or maybe the odd IBO. Like that's where British boxing was when I started 25 years ago. Now, people may not realise the Sydney Olympics in 2000 when Audley Harrison won the gold medal was the first step towards changing the game because the Olympic Team GB went, oh, boxing medal. Oh, yeah, there's a couple of quid. Let's even get a medal next time because we spend all these millions on athletics and we're crap. We don't give anything to boxing, but we've just won heavyweight, super heavyweight gold. Oh, yeah, there's a few quid. Yeah, let's see what happens now. Oh, 2004, Athens, Greece, Amir Khan, silver medal. Wait a minute, bloody hell. It doesn't cost much to boxing if we get medals out of it.
And just one minute. Just one minute.
The 2012. Matt, it's my favourite line. I've got me a scene. I haven't even mentioned the scene Alexander Usyk fight at the European Championships at Greenbank Leisure Centre, have I? Either. I need to slip that one in there as well.
There you go. But you're right. You're right. Go on. Sorry,
I interrupted you. AJ, by the time it snowballed to London 2012, by the time AJ stepped out, got on that podium, beat Roberto Camarel on countback to win the super heavyweight gold medal, the fucking game had changed because he was on every mainstream channel. He was one of the standout stars in London 2012. And by doing that, it allowed Eddie Hearn to grab AJ and go, right, book me every arena in this country. I'm taking this kid for a dance. And that's what he did for the first 14 fights. And then 16 fights in, boom, some soft fellas called Charles Martin's got a world title. Easy money. Bring it on. So you can't...
So you're saying that there's credence and value in that to then put against Lennox's legacy? Because that's because that's legacy as well, is what you're saying. You're saying add that to the resume of what Anthony Joshua has done as well. And if Anthony Joshua can go on and beat Fury and if he can go on and beat Usyk and avenge that loss, then he's in the conversation, is what you're saying.
Yeah, because that was something that Lennox didn't have to do. But then Lennox, if AJ can't be penalised, if AJ's penalised because his list of opponents isn't of the calibre of Lennox Lewis, then we can absolutely penalise Lennox to go, well, boxing got basically fell off the back pages, Jordan the Klitschko era, because we weren't getting big fights. There was no opportunities and British fight fans were starved of any top-level boxing. AJ was a massive catalyst and a massive reason why all that came back. So you have to look at that as a positive as well. So listen, I think if AJ, and again we talked about it, if he can beat Ngannou, and he can beat Fury, and he can beat Usyk in a third fight, for me, Anthony Joshua absolutely should be sitting right next to Lennox Lewis at the top of that tree. Maybe not on the same level as Lennox, maybe a little seat down, but absolutely next to Lennox.
Has AJ brought more kids into the boxing gyms? Not just in the UK, I think around the world, man. I think he's got that absolutely vibe about him. I think 100%. He's inspired. I think he's inspired a lot of young people to have a little bit of a go. Not just young people, I'm sure other fighters are testament as well. Everything that AJ's done in 2012 and then the opportunities that other people have managed to get off the back of AJ fighting in stadiums and all these types of things. I'm sure other people will sing his praises as well. Listen, we've a long way to go before we start comparing that. Obviously, these guys absolutely are still going to be fighting for a few more years. So we'll compare their era once it's all said and done. But you know how fickle this game is, mate. We're talking about victories here. We're talking about wins. We're talking about turning people over and then going on to greatness. And then if it did this and did this and did this, what would it look like? And we're comparing it to each other and comparing it to eras gone past. What if he loses on Friday?
Yeah.
What if he loses on Friday? How will fans, given everything that you've just said is factual, everything that you've said has happened already, if he loses to a MMA guy, if he loses to a guy that has never won a professional boxing bout, how does that change the narrative?
Well, just like we talked about with Deontay Wilder, a name can be enhanced or it can be absolutely trashed with one performance. And that's when the conversations will start being, wait a minute, who is AJ actually beaten? And people will come back to the same conversation. Vladimir Klitschko, after being on the couch for 2 years, after losing his belts to Fury, was paid to come over to Wembley Stadium and fight AJ. And that's AJ's biggest single win of his career, because his losses don't stack up anymore. It's not like Andy Ruiz has gone on and, you know, put himself in the frame as being a top contender or whatever it may be. And I just think that the conversation then around AJ, you know, you're talking about it's how tight this sport can be. There's a light at the end of the tunnel that Eddie's hopefully driving towards, which you can see in this era of boxing, Anthony Joshua could step up and stand alongside Lennox Lewis, but just as easily in 1 second of that fight on Friday night, he could be absolutely degenerated to the level of a Frank Bruno. And I don't mean that offensively to Frank Bruno. We love Frank Bruno. He was a national icon. But Frank Bruno had a certain level of career where it was like, oh, that's our Frank. He was great. He was this. He was a world champion. But, you know, whenever he fought the best, he fell short. And it'll kind of be, people will start looking back and going, how many countbacks did AJ win at the Olympics? Camarel in the final on countback as well.
Yeah.
Since then, Charles Martin to become a world champion. Joe Parker to unify. Two-time world champion. Why? Because he beat Andy Ruiz in a safety first rematch. These are the conversations that will be started. Again, I'm jumping from one. I'm playing devil's advocate all over the place here. But if he loses to Ngannou on Saturday night, and make no mistake, I still stand by this, Ngannou beat Fury. But no one expected that Ngannou, certainly not Fury, who, let's be honest, was a fat mess when he fought Ngannou. That won't be the Tyson Fury we see fight Alexander Usyk in a few weeks' time. You will see a zoned in, collected, fully focused, fit as possible Tyson Fury. We'll get to that conversation then. The guy that rocked up to fight Francis Ngannou, that was embarrassing. He almost embarrassed himself, and he should have lost that fight. Regardless, that ain't going to be AJ, because AJ's seen that now. The surprise factor's gone. We know what Ngannou's capable of. We know he's incredibly tough. We know he's incredibly strong. And we know he can box. He can box on the back foot. He's got a good jab. He can switch to southpaw. He was doing stuff that Fury couldn't do. He switched to southpaw at one point. Fury tries to go southpaw, fumbles over his own feet. We know, AJ knows, just importantly, Ben Davison knows what Ngannou is capable of now. So he will be dialed in on Friday night. The problem is, when you know what he's capable of, when you come all guns blazing, there's no excuse then. Tyson had an excuse. I didn't expect that. Right, rematch straight away. Watch this next time. This is the next time. This is, if you like, boxing versus MMA. Now, AJ is representing the sport of boxing, and he needs to give him a boxing lesson on Friday. If he loses, Dillian White, is that the comeback fight? Does anybody care?
Listen, we're going to talk about the fight and how we think it plays out on Thursday's show. All right, this is more about the facts and stats of Anthony Joshua, but it is interesting to see how fans are going to react. My attitude towards him isn't going to change, whatever happens on Friday, but it's going to be interesting to see how fans react to a win or a loss come Friday night. Question here, do you know why it's on a Friday night this week? Yes, I do. It's Ramadan this weekend.
Sunday.
And I believe that it is the Grand Prix as well. So I think the Grand Prix is booked in Saturday. So that's why they've gone Friday night, because they couldn't, because of the holiday and the celebration of Ramadan, you couldn't be fighting, let's just say, in the early hours of Sunday morning, as you would probably be doing, hence it being a Friday night. So there you go. We could quickly touch upon what happened at the weekend, because I know that a lot of people obviously tuned into the action at the weekend just gone. Ray Ford became world champion randomly in a vacant world title fight, Nicholas. When you were talking about it before, I was thinking that was a vacant world title fight at the weekend. But a lot of people probably had Kolmatov as the favourite going into that fight. And he was the favourite going into the 12th round. He was the favourite going into the last minute of the 12th round. And then Ray Ford had a different plan. For the end of that fight, and it reminded me so much of Froch and Jermaine Taylor when Froch just said, "Listen, man, not today, son. We're having it, and you've got to take your hat off to Ray Ford, because he was losing it. We know that now across all three judges' scorecards. Watching it myself, I thought to myself, oh, mate, it's just not happened for him tonight. He can come again, young lad, he'll come again, no doubt about it. But what a set of stones just to throw the kitchen sink at it in the last 60 to 90 seconds and get that job done with 7 seconds left on the clock. Congratulations to him.
That's the, it's the dream way to win a world title. You know, if you're going to win a world title, that's how you want to do it. In absolutely dramatic fashion, snatching victory from the jaws of defeat. You know, you're covered in blood. You've had an absolute war. That's how you want to do it, man. You want to go down and define your legacy and be that guy. But that's the moment where, you know, and I know Eddie's posted a lot of stuff now about where Ray Ford's reaching out to him as an amateur, saying, one day I want to turn pro, can we talk? And then he does reach out saying, I'm not going to the Olympics now, can we talk? And Eddie invites him to New York and all this stuff. And I'm like, yeah, man, I'm bought in on those journeys. I love all that. I love the fact that Eddie's supported him and got him to this point. And, you know, he's not necessarily allowed him, but he's gone, yeah, man, go and fight in a top rank show. You're chasing your dream. It's not about me. It's about you, this. Go and win your world title. And...
Well, they lost the person, didn't they?
Oh, did they? Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
He's fighting for the world title. That's all that matters.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's losing the fight. Kolotov looked brilliant. He looked like a weight division above. He looked fucking massive.
Yeah.
And at times looked great. But Ray Ford was like a shit that wouldn't flush. He was still there. He was winning rounds. He'd nick rounds. Didn't let Kolmatov have an easy fight at all. Not one round. Every round that he even won, he had to work hard for.
We said drag him into the second half of the fight and let's see what's what. And let's he ended up getting the jumps. Yeah.
And you know what? I got a few messages of people saying, Nick, that guy, how the hell did the judges give Kolmatov the 11th round? There's no way he won it. I thought he did. I thought he looked good in the 11th round.
I thought Kolmatov landed the most significant shots in that 11th round.
In round 11, yeah. So when he comes out for round 12, even like 90 seconds into round 12, I'm like, he's still moving. Yes, he's tired. Yes, he's exhausted. But he's bouncing around like a guy, I've won a world title here. I've won a world title here. With 90 seconds to go.
Yeah.
And then Ray Ford does the one thing that every coach, every parent, every manager, every fight fan wants to see. Because that's something you can't recreate. Halfway through round number 12, you're down on the scorecards. What are you going to do? You can't recreate that. That comes from inside here. That comes from inside here. That desire to be like, nah, man, this is not happening to me in my dream. I've worked too damn hard to get here. I don't care how good you are. I don't care how big you are. this is my night. And just to find the magic then, just to explode, get the shot. I've seen a few people as well say, oh, premature stoppage. No, man, not for me.
He turned his back.
He's falling all over the place. He's not intelligently defending himself because he's facing the ropes. His arms are down here. I was absolutely over the moon with the stoppage.
Should he have took a knee? If Komatov had
his
wits about him, he should have just took the knee, shouldn't he? Took the 10-8. Because, I mean, the first one was it was a knockdown for me. His legs are gone. And I know that there was a bit of a throw-in action. That should have been scored.
Yeah.
But even a 10-7, I don't think he loses. Because I think I had it 8-4.
I think he might have done on the judges' scorecards. I think he might have done, to be fair. But still, regardless, you're right. You know, taking a knee, maybe you still become world champion. But then this is why this was a great fight, though. Two undefeated fighters, two guys with lacking championship level experience, both less than 12 fights or whatever it was. This is about learning on the job. It's not the end of him. He comes again, the challenge. He comes again, absolutely. No one would doubt seeing that fight again further down the line or him getting a world title opportunity somewhere else. No one would disregard that because he was brilliant. For 11 and a half rounds, he was a world champion. So, but he lacked the experience, Adam, when he did get here to go, you know what, I'm well up here. I'll take a knee, run the clock down, get on my bike. But that'll come now. He's added that to his game. But it was Ray Ford's night. He was incredible. What I will say is, Lopez, absolute monster. When Nick Ball becomes world champion this weekend, I hope he calls out Lopez because Ball Lopez would be absolutely magnificent.
Would you not want Ford against Ball on the Matchroom Queensbury card?
There you go. I'll take that as well. Either or. I'll take either or. Thanks very much.
Fair enough, lad. Fair enough. Sam Eggington Friday night. Listen, it didn't go his way, but Jesus, man. Have you ever seen a crap Sam Eggington fight? Brilliant. And congratulations to Abbas Barau, mate. Superb. Superb performance. And we knew last week, we were talking about his elite amateur pedigree. We were talking about how slick he was. He showed a massive set of stones because Sam asked him questions and he answered them. Stood there and he went, no, mate, you're not out-toughing me. I'm the tough guy and I'm the better boxer. And rightfully so. How you get to 114-114 in that fight is ridiculous. Let's be dead straight. It's absolutely ridiculous. Abbas won at worst 8, probably 9 of those rounds. Yes, Sam's in the rounds, but he's not winning large percentages of those rounds. Come on, man. 114-114 was an absolute joke.
Yeah, it was. And if I was doing a list for worst judge call cards for 2024, that would absolutely have made the list. And I love Sam Eggington. You know, he may as well be a scouter, little tattooed Sam. That's how fondly I feel for him because we're all bought in on the journey. You know, you don't need me to repeat the story. Everybody knows the story, where he's gone, where he's from, where he's come from. Midlands area champion to European champion already. And, you know, beating former world champions, former world amateurs. He's had an absolutely mesmerizing career. I would have loved us to get to Vegas. Every time we talk about Sam Eggington, I'm like, why didn't we get a Vegas shot in there, man? Or the Madison, you know, why did we get a big one? But regardless, I just hope Sam's made some good money, man. And you know what? That doesn't mean I want to see him retire. I don't. I absolutely do not. He lost to the better man. Sam, that's sport. Sometimes you go in there. Yeah. This is what happens when you go in there with a very capable opponent. You go, you know what? This guy's very good. I need to be on my A game. Everyone says I'm the underdog, but guess what? I'm always the fucking underdog. Sound, let's roll the dice, baby. Let's go. And he gave it everything he had. Super entertaining fight. This is what makes me laugh about Channel 5. Of all the weird headliners they have on there, they should lock Sam Eggington down. He should be Channel 5's main headliner, like Shane Early back in the 90s on ITV every other Saturday night. Just say to Sam Eggington and John Pegg, right, forget Wasserman. Let them mess about with KSI and all that bollocks. We're just going to sign Super Sam Eggington and we're going to put you in the main event Friday night, 4 times a year on Channel 5. Sound? Everyone happy? Brilliant. And I tell you what, the viewers would be there.
I think you're right, mate. He's only 30 years of age as well, isn't he? Anyway.
Absolutely love him.
Anyway, we've held people for far too long on a Monday evening because we're doing this every single night this week. Just in case you joined our live stream late, yes, we're doing a live program at 8 o'clock every single night this week as we build up towards AJ and Ngannou. Tonight, we have been speaking about Anthony Joshua, solely about Anthony Joshua, asking questions about Anthony Joshua and where he currently stands in the heavyweight landscape. Tomorrow, we're going to flip it. We're going to go and talk Francis Ngannou. Yes, we've only got 10 rounds of boxing data to talk about. I get that. But we're going to bring in a bit of life story, things that we've picked up on from the world of MMA, and we've covered a lot of Francis in the world of MMA, as I'm sure you're fully aware. And we'll bring that and try and use that as to how this might affect him come Friday night. We'll talk about his corner, because we know all those boys like Eric and Dewey and all those types of characters that are in there. So come and join us for the Francis Ngannou show tomorrow night. And then on Wednesday, I know I said this at the start, do you want to be a part of this? Do you want to be on the program? As in vision, speaking, making your own points, calling us out, saying you're talking nonsense here, there and everywhere, or maybe agreeing, whatever, doesn't matter. As long as it's based in and around Knockout Chaos and this event on Friday. It can be about the main event, it can be about Zhang and Parker, it can be about Nick Ball and his attempts at becoming champion against Ray Vargas. Anything that you want to talk about connected to this on Friday, you're welcome to do so. Just make sure you send us a little message on social media and we'll try and get you involved in the program in some way, shape or form. That's on Wednesday, and then on Thursday we'll have a roundup of everything, and we'll tell you how we think that this fight's going to play out. So 8 o'clock every single night this week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then on Friday, live watch along. So if you're watching it at home, put this stream on and we'll be there as a fight companion, shouting, screaming and enjoying ourselves. All right. So there you go. Thank you very much for tuning into us. I know it was a little bit different today, obviously doing a live show, but I've enjoyed it. You've enjoyed it, mate. Yeah.
That's fucking brilliant.
And hopefully you watching it have got something out of it as well. Thank you so much for interacting with the comments. More of the same tomorrow. Definitely more of the same on Wednesday and Thursday. We will catch you next time. Fight Disciples.